through this tape are made available the words of the world's greatest contemporary mystic, Osho, previously known as Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. Thousands of his discourse tapes are available worldwide. Many, many people have been transformed through listening to them. This is an invitation to experience the vision of Osho. In these excerpts, we enter the world of wonder, the world of mystery. Osho explains that, to experience true religiousness, we must return to innocence, to that state of, ah.
One must understand the awe of things, and then all is understood. They say that philosophy begins in wonder. Perhaps. But philosophy always tries to destroy wonder. It wants to kill its mother. The whole effort of philosophy is to demystify existence. The more you think you know, the less you have awe, wonder, reverence, love. Existence seems to be then still, flat. There are no more mysteries in it. And of course, when there is no mystery outside, there is no poetry inside. They go together. They are parallel. Mystery outside, poetry within. The poetry can arise only if life remains worth exploring. The moment you know, poetry dies. Knowledgeability is the death of all that is beautiful in you. And with the death of poetry, you live a life which is not worth living. It can't have any significance. It can't have any celebration. It cannot bloom. It cannot dance. You can only drag. So maybe they are right who say that philosophy begins in wonders. But I would like to add one thing more. It tries to kill its mother. Religion is born in wonders, lives in wonders. Religion begins in wonder and ends in more wonders. That is the difference between philosophy and religion. Both may have the beginning in wonder, but then they part ways. Religion starts looking into mysteries and finds that those mysteries go on deepening. The more you know, the less you know. And the ultimate in knowing is ignorance. You become utterly ignorant. You don't know anything at all. A state of innocence is achieved. In that state of innocence, poetry comes to its perfection. That poetry is religion. Philosophy is against religion. Notwithstanding what the philosophers go on saying. There cannot be a religious philosophy as such. All philosophies are anti-religious. Because all philosophies search for knowledge. And religion searches for being. And these are diametrically opposite dimensions. Knowledge is superficial, peripheral. Being is central, essential. Being is when you are not. Knowledge is when you are too much. Knowledge is an ego trip. Being is egolessness. Philosophy will give you ideas that you know, and religion will make it clear to you that you don't know and that you can't know. That truth is not only unknown but unknowable. And when you face the unknowable truth within and without, the poetry bursts forth. You are in a dance. In that innocence is samadhi, ecstasy. So remember it, that religion is not any philosophic endeavor. It is poetic, utterly poetic. Religion is poetry. It is not an accident that many great mystics have spoken in poetry. Kabir is one. His poetry is immensely beautiful. He knows nothing of language. He knows nothing of grammar. But whatsoever he says is pure poetry. He does not bother about the forms, the styles. He knows nothing of poetics, but he is a poet and one of the greatest. Sometimes, if the heart has poetry, even prose becomes poetry. And sometimes, when the heart has no poetry, even the poetry is prose. Poetry does not depend on the form of the expression. It depends on the content. It depends on the innermost core that is expressed in it. Plato, one of the greatest philosophers of the world, has said that in his utopian state republic, poets will not be allowed. Poets will be thought almost like criminals. Why? What is wrong with the poet? There is something wrong with the poet in the eyes of a philosopher. Because the poet is illogical. And the poet remains in the state of innocence. And the poet trusts the mystery of life. And the poet does not try to know. The poet tries to live this mystery, this existence. He is not worried about the why of it. He is not concerned to analyze it, to dissect it. When he comes across a flower, he enjoys it. He loves it. He talks with the flower. He communicates. He dances around it. He celebrates it. But he is not bothered why this flower is red or yellow. Why this flower is there at all. Why? Accidentally? Or there is a plan behind it? No, the why never happens to the poet. He takes things as they are. He does not go in their past. He does not go to the original cause. And he does not bother about the ultimate end. This moment is all for the poet. He is absorbed in the here and the now. And religion is the ultimate form of poetry. The essential form of poetry. So I say to you, one must understand the ah of things, and then all is understood. Remember, understanding is not knowledge. Knowledge is not understanding. Knowledge is objective. Understanding is subjective. You understand when you love. Knowledge is possible only when you are not involved in any kind of sympathy, love, compassion. The scientist makes it an absolute criterion of knowledge that the knower should not be involved in the known. You should remain objective. You should remain aloof, indifferent. You should not get into the thing that you are trying to know. You should remain outside, utterly outside, uninvolved. Only then your knowledge will be valid. The poet understands. The religious mystic understands. They don't know. And the understanding is possible only when you participate. Not that you stand outside, but you dive in. To understand a flower means to become a flower. To understand a woman means to become that woman. To understand a man means to participate so totally with the man that all boundaries are merged, that your beings start overlapping each other. That there comes a moment of meeting when it is very difficult to say who is who. When two beings pulsate in such unison that it is almost as if they are one. When their heartbeats are in a rhythm, when they breathe as if there is only one soul, maybe two bodies, but one soul, when the participation is so total, then only you know. Religion says the existence is available to understanding, but not to knowledge. The very requirement of knowledge, of being objective, aloof spectator, debars you. You will know much, but you will not understand at all. You will go on gathering knowledge. You will become very much informed. But deep down, you will not have any insight into the reality of things. The ah of things has to be understood, must be understood. And understanding needs participation. Understanding needs courage to dissolve yourself. Understanding needs a very adventurous mind who is ready to melt. If you can melt with existence, then you are religious. That melting I call prayer. When somebody has melted so deeply with existence that he is not there as a knower separate from the known, but the knower and the known have become one. In that moment, the secrets are revealed. But then the mystery is not destroyed. The mystery is even more deepened. Remember it always, that if your mystery of life goes on deepening, then you are on the right track. If you start feeling that there is no mystery in life and you become knowledgeable, you are on the wrong track. Avoid philosophy and take a deep plunge into poetry. Be as much of a poet as possible, because the mystic is the growth of the poet. The poet is on the way of being a mystic, and only a poet can be a mystic. It is better to read poetry than philosophy. It is better to sing poetry than to ponder over philosophical problems. Philosophical problems are superficial, and the whole effort is based on one thing. Philosophy takes it for granted that life can be reduced to knowledge, and that is utterly absurd. Life cannot be reduced to knowledge. Life is so vast. It is so infinite. And how you can reduce it to knowledge? Because you are part of life. And even for logic's sake, we can accept that one day comes when you have known all. Still, you would have remained unknown. The knower would have remained unknown. And if the knower himself remains unknown, what is the point of all your knowledge? In your own house there is darkness. So what is the point of all the light that you see all around? You live in darkness. You are darkness. And there is no way to know the knower. Who will know it? Because knowledge means you will have to divide again. Poetry means unite. Knowledge means divide. Poetry means make bridges. And knowledge means break bridges. If the modern man looks so sad, empty, the reason is philosophy has succeeded. The reason is that philosophy has released much knowledge, and the universities go on stuffing your heads with knowledge. Remember, with Kabir, Kabir is a poet, not a philosopher, a mystic. He understands, but he does not know. In understanding, you feel. It is from the heart. You have the taste of life. It is on your tongue, but you cannot say it. No word is adequate to say it. No language potent enough to say it. All expressions look so pale compared to the understanding that arises in a mystic, that he can say it only through silence or at the most through poetry. Poetry is very close to silence because it says and yet says it not. That is the definition of poetry. It says and it says it not. It uses words in such a way that the silence is not disturbed. It uses sounds, but in such a skillful way that the silence is enhanced, not destroyed. Joseph Campbell has said, those who desire and strive for salvation most earnestly are in their zeal bound the more. Since it is exactly their self-seeking that is giving them their pain. When the Buddha extinguished ego in himself, the world burst into flowers. But that exactly is the way it has always appeared to those in whom wonder and not salvation is religion. Let wonder be your religion, not salvation. Salvation is again a philosophic concept. Let wonder be your dimension. Attain to wondering eyes again. You had them once when you were a child. All children are born full of wonders. But we destroy their wonders. We stuff their mind with knowledge. Knowledge which is futile. Knowledge which only destroys life. Knowledge which maybe is useful, utilitarian, but in the ultimate sense, just ho-hum. You go on stuffing the mind of the innocent children, and sooner or later, you succeed. They are helpless. And your success is their failure. Once they start feeling that they know, they have lost track. That track has to be found again. Yes, it is lost, but it can be regained. Because deep down somewhere you are still wondering. The knowledge remains only on the surface. Just dive within yourself and you will touch that core of wonder is still there. You are still a child. And sometimes that child comes up in moments of love, in moments of joy. Sometimes listening to music or seeing a sunset, that child surfaces. And again you are running after butterflies. And again you are collecting seashells on the beach. And again your eyes have a sparkle. And again your heart is beating in a new rhythm. It happens to everybody once in a while. The religious person makes it is his very life. The religious person is one who makes it his very style. He lives in wonders. He breathes in wonders. He walks in wonders. Everything creates wonder in him. A pebble or a dry leaf is as wondrous as anything. The whole life is full of miracles for him. If you have the eyes of wonder, then miracle is everywhere. It is spread all over the place. The existence is made of the stuff called miracle. It is miraculous. From one end to another. Just you need to have eyes which are still capable of wonder. Eyes which are still capable of wonder are young. And eyes which are no more capable of wonder are blind and old and dead. Clean your eyes of dust. By dust I mean knowledge. If you can learn only one thing here being with me, if you can learn wonders, you have learned all. If you can unlearn your knowledge, you have learned all. If you can become again innocent as you were in your childhood, you are very close to God. That's why Jesus says, unless you are like children, you will not enter into my kingdom of God. And remember, that kingdom is not far away. That surrounds you. That kingdom is here. You are still in it. Just you have lost the eyes to see it. The kingdom is not to be gained. Only eyes have to be regained, rediscovered. And it is not a difficult phenomenon, because you had once those eyes. They are only covered with dust. The mirror has become covered with a layer of dust, but the mirror is there. Remove the dust, and again things will become beautiful. Again things will have meaning and significance. If you become too much knowledgeable, then this whole life is nothing but a tale told by an idiot, full of fury and noise, signifying nothing. It is not accidental that all the modern thinkers of the world, East or West, are continuously thinking, talking, discussing, analyzing the concept of meaninglessness. This is the age of meaninglessness. And why? Why this age has become the age of meaninglessness? Because man has become very knowledgeable. Universal education, schools, colleges, universities. The dream of knowledge is fulfilled. Everybody knows. And because everybody knows, nobody understands. You will have to renounce knowledge. I don't ask you to renounce your family, your wealth, your world. But I certainly ask you to renounce your knowledge, your mind, your head.
To almost everybody, the more knowledgeable you become, the less wonder is felt. And parents, schools, universities, society, they all go on forcing you to become knowledgeable. Their whole effort is to give you knowledge. Your inner space becomes so full of knowledge that wonder disappears. Wonder has no space left to abide in you. A child has the eyes of wonder. He feels awe. He is mystified by each and everything. Small things surprise him. Hence his bubbling joy, because his life is a constant discovery. You become knowledgeable. The society wants you to become knowledgeable. Knowledge is very, very needed. Knowledge has much utility. And wonder is dangerous, because a person who wonders is bound to become either a philosopher or a poet or a mystic. And all these three kinds are useless for the society. Society needs machines, skillful machines, by giving you more and more knowledge, making you full of knowledge, society turns you into an automata, into a robot. And the more you think you know, the more wonder becomes impossible, because when you know, how can you wonder? A small child can wonder why the trees are green. But how can you wonder? You know it is because of chlorophyll. Although you don't know much, because the question can be raised again, why the chlorophyll makes trees green? And you will have to shrug your shoulders. You have simply pushed the question a little back. The more you know, the less you wonder. But the moment wonder dies in you, religion dies in you, because religion consists of wonder and awe. Knowledge demystifies life and existence. And religion exists only when life is a mystery. Hence you will have to learn wonder again. In fact, a right kind of education will never do this. It will give you knowledge, but it will not destroy your wonder. That will be the right kind of education. It will give you knowledge, but it will keep you alert that no knowledge can destroy wonder. In fact, on the contrary, knowledge can make you more wondering. The small child cannot wonder about chlorophyll. If you are rightly educated, you can wonder about the greenery of the trees, you can also wonder about chlorophyll. Albert Einstein's last words were that I have been thinking whole of my life that I will demystify universe. But what has happened is just the contrary. The more I went deeper into existence, the mystery has deepened. I am dying with full wonders. I am dying in wonders. But this is rare. This is the quality of a genius. The genius is one who does not allow the society to reduce him into a robot. That's my definition of a genius. Everybody is born as a genius, but people start compromising very soon. And when they compromise, their talents disappear. Their intelligence dies. They go on selling their soul for mundane things, for useless things. Useless in the ultimate sense. They may be useful here, but death comes and all those things are taken away with you. If you can die like Albert Einstein, mystified, with full wonder, with prayer in the heart, with a poet rising in you. You have lived rightly and you are dying rightly. And the man who lives rightly and dies rightly is a spiritual person. Albert Einstein is far more spiritual than your Vatican Pope and your Shankaracharyas. Far more spiritual. Because before he died, somebody asked him, if you are born again and God asks you, I am certain you would like to become a great physicist and mathematician again. He said, no, never. If another opportunity is given to me, rather than being a physicist, I would like to become a plumber. I would like to live a very, very ordinary kind of life, anonymous, so that I can enjoy life more easily. So nobody comes in my way. My fame, prestige, research, nothing comes in my way, so that I can have a deeper communion with existence. An aspiring variety artist walked into an agent's office looking for work. The agent said, what do you do? Without a word, the artist lifted up his arms, flew around the office, out of the window, across the street and back in through the window, making a perfect two-point landing in front of the agent's desk. Okay, okay, said the agent. So you do bird impersonations. Anything else? This is what happens to knowledgeable people. Nothing surprises them. Even if God stands before them, they will say, okay, okay, so you are God. Anything else? Drop your knowledgeability. The theatrical impresario Maxidoldam was once approached by a man in his theater. I have got an act to offer you that is really unique, said the man. It will take London by storm. All you have to do is put £10,000 in the bank for my wife, and I will commit suicide on the stage of your theater. Somewhat astounded, Maxie pondered the offer. He finally said, but what will you do for an encore? There are people who are so constantly utilitarians. Their whole thinking consists of utilities. He asks, but what will you do for an encore? People have become so much concerned with the worldly things, utilities, commodities, usefulness, that nothing surprises them. Nothing shocks them into awareness. They go on like sleepwalkers. The rose bush brings flowers. They don't see. They are blind. The birds sing in the morning. They don't hear. They are deaf. They have lost all sensitivity. They have become so dead and dull that nothing thrills them to a dance. Nothing brings a song to their lips. Nothing gives a dance to their feet. And the culprit is knowledge. In a more understanding world, knowledge will still be given to you, but you will also be taught how to go on protecting your capacities to wonder. Your poetry will not be killed, crushed under the weight of knowledge. In a real university, only half time will be devoted to the utilitarian objectives, and the other half will be devoted to non-utilitarian objectives. Poetry, music, painting, dance, meditation, prayer are just relaxing under a tree. Just sitting silently under a tree, doing nothing. Half the time of the schools, colleges and universities should be devoted to non-utilitarian activities for no purpose at all, but just for the sheer joy of it. Then only we will have a whole man in the world. Up to now there have existed two types of men. One is the worldly, he is 100% utilitarian. Another is the monk, he is 100% non-utilitarian. Both are lopsided, both are missing something. The monk is missing the beauties of the world, the beauties of relationship, the beauties of people. The monk is poor, spiritually poor, because he is missing all the enriching experiences of life, of love, of friendship, of enmity, of anger, of compassion. He is missing all that variety that enriches the soul. He is just an empty blankness, a kind of blank canvas. Nothing has been painted on him. He is spiritually poor. I have seen so many saints that I can say it to you. It is very rare to come across a saint who has some richness of the soul. He is so monotonous. He is so boring. His whole life is nothing but a boredom. How he manages to live such a bored life? He can manage it only because he has dulled all his senses. He has dulled even his intelligence. So he cannot feel the boredom. Do you know, except man, no other animal feels boredom. Buffaloes are never bored. Donkeys are never bored. They don't have that intelligence to feel boredom. It is only man who feels boredom. And it is only man who has the capacity to laugh. Boredom and laughter are two sides of the same coin. But your monks, your so-called religious people, are not bored and cannot laugh either. They have fallen to the states of buffaloes and donkeys. I have heard about a philosopher who used to walk on the streets looking at the sky, stars, moon, sun, clouds, birds on the wing. And it was natural that many times he will bump into people, stumble into something. And it was his habit, whenever somebody will bump in him or he will bump into somebody, he will say, "Are you a donkey or something?" And he was very much respected. He was a well-known philosopher. So everybody tolerated. Nobody took any offense. One day it happened, he bumped into a donkey. He was just going to say his old. Are you a donkey or something? He was just going to say it. But then he looked and he laughed and he said, sir, you are just yourself. What else can I say to you? The people who escape from the world become donkeys, buffaloes. They fall below human awareness, human sensibilities. That's why they can live a bold life. No laughter, no boredom. They have become animals. They have lost the glory of being a human being. They have fallen back. Of course, the life of an animal is less anxious. There is no anxiety, no anguish. Hence you will see a kind of serenity around them. But a serenity without intelligence is not any worth. When serenity happens with intelligence, a Buddha is born. When serenity happens without intelligence, you have gone back to the world of the buffaloes. But this has been the case. Few people have moved away from the world, 100% to non-utilitarian activities, praying, meditating alone. This is not and cannot be a total life. And the others, the millions, are living only utilitarian lives, having more and more things, having bigger and bigger bank balances, and they don't know anything of play. Even if they play, they become very serious in their play. Even their play becomes a business. People cannot simply play cards. They have to put money into it. Then it becomes something serious because it takes the form of a business. Something has to be staked. Only then they can play. You see players? Even in their play they are so dead serious. Question of life and death. Nobody seems to be playful. The world is full of utilitarian activities and people have lost all qualities of meditation, prayer, play, wondering, feeling awe, watching stars, looking at the flowers, playing on the guitar, or singing a song. Not for any other reason, but for the sheer joy of it. These people are also very poor. I want to create a totally new man in the world who will not be poor in this way or that, who will be really rich, who will have all the richness of the world, of the relationships, of all the challenges of existence. And who will have also the capacity to be silent, the space of playfulness, meditativeness. This is my idea of a sannyasi. Be in the world and yet be not part of it. Be in the world and yet go on surpassing it. Don't be an escapist. The right education will create sannyasins in the world. Sannyasins in my sense. It will create holy men. 50% should be devoted to the world and 50% to the beyond. And both should remain in a harmony, in a deep synthesis. Then you can be knowledgeable and yet wonder continues to flow in you. Then you can know and yet you are mystified by existence.
Thank you.